Hello, I'm the junior historian, and today we are going to be discussing one of the most horrific revelations of the 21st century. This event showed the world that even those supposedly doing God's work can be monsters to rival the most dangerous predators of our time. This event was, of course, the Catholic Church sex abuse scandal. Be warned, this is going to be a rather disturbing and infuriating video. So, be warned. Of course, for reference, I myself am not a Catholic, though much of my family is. While I am an atheist, I have no problem with non-exploitative organized religion. Incidences like this give religion a bad name, and I don't think that is fair, despite the way the Catholic faith works, aiding some aspects of the scandal. This video was originally inspired by a project I did in history at school, and that research will aid me in this video. Another inspiration was the Oscar award-winning film Spotlight, based on the work of a group of Boston Globe reporters who discovered the scandal and revealed it to the public. I would highly recommend the film and it is currently available on Netflix, so go check it out. But let's just jump into it. The causes of the scandal are numerous, but three main ones can be easily deciphered. The trust that was held by those men, the church trying to save face, and the celibacy requirement. We will examine the causes of the abuse and the environment that let it flourish. Cases of abuse have been coming to light throughout the 20th and 21st century, but the church always used the same defense of a few bad eggs, claiming you would find the same in any other profession. From the perspective of the public, this seemed to be accurate, as only the occasional case would pop up and the church would take them out of circulation and or defrock them. But this was nowhere near accurate, as the church very well knew. By the 60s, it was common knowledge among the upper echelons of the Catholic Church that there was a big issue. It was so widely known that treatment centers were set up to help cure these priests, despite evidence that almost all child predators are not able to be healed. They also used this to show families that the priest was no longer going to do any work in a parish before shipping them off to a new parish a few months later. Almost all of these men were repeat offenders, but why were these predators allowed so much unsupervised access to children? Comes down to the fact that the Catholic Church's doctrine dictates that the church's priests are the layman's link to God himself. So they are engendered with a lot of trust. This means that for the estimated 6% of clergy who are delinquent with children, they had the perfect cover to have time alone with their victims. There's a mixture of factors that made the church cover things up. It's a mixture of shame, desperation, and the natural want to protect your own. First, let's look at shame. In the Catholic faith, the priesthood is a parishioner's direct connection to God. So, if that direct connection happens to be a pedophile, that does not reflect well on the church and their beliefs. In a time where faith across the world was becoming less universal as a scientific revolution had taken hold, the church did not want there to be any reason for its members to doubt or reconsider their faith. Next, the desperation. In certain parts of the world at this time, there was a shortage of Catholic priests, especially in South America and Asia. This meant that the church felt they could not afford to lose so many of their priests, so they used the recycling strategy mentioned above. Despite these moves being rather short-sighted from our point of view, at the time the church held a lot of sway on governments around the world, though it was noted by many among the Catholic Church during the latter half of the 20th century that they no longer could rely on Catholic judges to rule in favor of the church. This shows that the church was very much aware of the preferential treatment that they were receiving, but were aware that it was waning and they needed to change how they did things if they wanted to continue lying about the amount of abuse within their ranks. Many would say that the celibacy requirement is the biggest contributing factor to the overall issue. I would say that it is a contributing factor, but it is nowhere near as big as many people say. Another very similar contributing factor is the emotional immaturity caused by the repression mandated by the church. The fact that they are meant to be celibate means they never mature past the point of a teenager. This means that they felt better suited to younger people, especially boys. You would think that the church of all organizations would not tolerate this, as two of their core tenets are celibacy and protecting youth. But the reasons stated above are the main reasons why they were so willing to violate their own principles. To conclude the causes, there were numerous ones. The first one I discussed was the position of trust held by these men, especially in lower class households. The second one I discussed was the church's cover-up, which made this scandal, when it was revealed, become a scandal. As if they had been honest, there would have been no scandal to discover. The final cause I explored was the celibacy requirement and subsequential emotional immaturity on the part of the clergy, which led to some priests having a propensity for children. These three things overall are some of the largest contributors to the Catholic Church sex abuse scandal. Since 1994, more than 130 victims have come forward revealing the abuse they suffered at the hands of Father John Gagan. Gagan was an ex-priest who had been bounced around from parish to parish. Each time he moved, it was because someone had come forward to his superiors and made accusations of abuse. Over time, a Boston lawyer named Mitchell Garabedian built up a group of cases all directed at Gagan, and in some cases Cardinal Bernard F. Law, who was mostly accused of knowing Gagan was a predator but still reassigning him. Garabedian eventually gathered almost 90 cases against Gagan. But why did Law keep Gagan around if he was such a big liability? Well, there are many reasons, but one thing that aided Gagan's case was the church's status as a charity. In Massachusetts, they had a charitable immunity statute limiting the penalties for each case against a charity to $20,000. This is why Gagan sued separate cases as opposed to class action. In July 2001, Martin Barron, the first ever Jewish editor of the Boston Globe, started his new role. This made the Globe staff rather nervous, as at a previous paper he had worked at, he had cut 45% of the staff in his first few months. One of the teams that looked like they were up for cuts was the four-person investigative team, Spotlight, as they often only released a single story a year. When he joined, Barron noticed a story about Gagan, which had been buried, a practice of releasing a story in a less read section of the paper. He suggested that Spotlight investigate it, and after a small amount of pushback, they did. After over 6 months of investigation, the Globe released its first of close to 600 stories about the church over the next year. This article contained damning evidence that not only did Law know about Gagan's history of abuse, but about almost 90 other priests in the Boston Archdiocese alone. It was also revealed that there was a systematic cover-up, not only in Boston, but across nearly the entire globe, as the church was so aware of the issue they had set up treatment centers around the world, which were a way to take priests out of circulation for a while before reassigning them to a parish. This article was expected to be met with anger from Boston's predominantly Catholic population, but to the Globe's surprise, they were flooded with phone calls from across the archdiocese making further accusations from nearly 1,000 new victims. By the time the dust had settled, claims had been made against nearly 250 church officials, ranging from lowly parish priests to archbishops. This, of course, was a huge blow to the church, and Law had done nothing to make things better for himself. When the Globe had offered him a chance to make a statement in an article, he said he was not even interested in what the Globe's questions were. This sheer arrogance showed how invulnerable Law felt in this situation. He clearly felt that the majority of Catholics would just ignore the article as a hit piece crafted by Barron against the church. But due to the amount of people in Boston who had been abused and the convincing nature of the evidence, this was not the case. Law held on to his job for almost a year before, in December of 2002, finally resigning as Archbishop and being reassigned to the Basilica Santa Maria Maggiore, a high-ranking, mostly ceremonial position. This move was criticized as a way to shield Law from any criminal action, as he became a citizen of Vatican City. He was allowed to keep his role as a cardinal and was allowed to vote in the 2005 papal conclave. Law passed away on the 20th of December 2017 and was given the standard funeral rite for a cardinal who dies in Rome, including a mass at St. Peter's Basilica, where Pope Francis performed the mass, though the mass was not live-streamed as it normally was. In 2001, Pope John Paul II made a historic step by summoning all American cardinals, including Law, to the Vatican to discuss the crisis. This move was also the beginning of the church as a whole finally acknowledging the scandal and their involvement in the cover-up, though no pope has ever been fully implicated in abuse or the cover-up. One of the likely reasons that Pope Benedict XVI resigned is the scandal and the stress it likely caused him. This was a massive action, as the last pope to resign was over 600 years ago. Each pope since Benedict XVI has repeatedly apologized for the cover-up, but none has taken action against Law, despite their commitment to rid the church of those involved in the scandal. The Catholic Church sex abuse scandal was one of the defining events of the 21st century. Thanks to the hard work of the Boston Globe Spotlight team, the church's immoral actions have been revealed. It helped bring many criminals to justice and prevented much future abuse, as well as forcing a 2,000-year-old institution to change its corrupt ways. Though it also showed that even in the most dire of situations, the church won't take action against their own high-ranking members. Over the last 17 years, the world has tried to come to grips with the true scale of the Catholic Church sex abuse scandal. It shook the world and brought into question the past of everyone from your local parish priest to the Pope himself. The consequences of the scandal are many, but I see three that are very obvious. The first is the permanent damage to the church's public image. The next is it changed how the whole world treats the church, and it damaged the faith of many Catholics across the earth. The way the general public looked at the church has changed very much in the last two decades. Before, even those who were not a part of the church generally viewed it as an organization that, while they may not agree with, did some good work. The church ran various charities and support organizations, which led people to view them as a generally good organization. Now, of course, there is much suspicion and anger that surrounds just about anything the church does, especially anything involving children and schools. This shows how much people's view of the church has changed, and it went from a mostly benevolent organization offering salvation to its members to a bed of corruption and self-interest. Before 2002, priests were not mandated reporters, people who were required to report any abuse they were aware of by law, which meant that almost all priests involved in the scandal avoided prosecution. This was because most cases were outside the statute of limitations, and all those who helped hide the abuse were not technically committing a crime. This was, of course, changed in 2002 when priests became mandated reporters and now have to report any instances of physical or sexual abuse that they are aware of. but by this point, Law had been reassigned to Rome and was out of reach of the American legal system. The effectiveness of the law has been called into question by many religious groups who claim it's a violation of priest-penitent privilege, i.e. confessional. But it has been praised by many others as a step forward to finally fully separating church and state. The abuse scandal hugely affected the way many Catholics look at the church. In a Gallup poll released on the 13th of March this year, found that 37% of American Catholics have considered leaving the faith after the scandal came to light. This is a huge revelation, as America has 72 million Catholics, which means that if this survey is accurate to the entire country, 26.64 million American Catholics have considered leaving the church. This is a blow to the church, as it shows that many who have never contemplated leaving the faith have had a crisis within themselves due to seeing the organization they trusted lie to them so blatantly. This video has been a rather depressing one to make. I'm sure it was not fun to watch, but my aim with this video was to present the facts in a truthful manner with no sanitizing bullshit. What happened was one of the biggest crimes that will go unpunished, like the global financial crisis or many genocides throughout history. It killed many people. Those it did not kill likely had any chance at a normal life shattered by the monsters that hid in plain sight. Those who caused and facilitated it were given a slap on the wrist, then promoted, while everyday people around them were left to pick up the pieces. I'm sorry for being so impassioned, but I feel very strongly about this topic. I find the injustice to be one of the biggest failings of the developed world in the past 5 decades. If you would like to know more about the investigation, I would highly recommend the book Betrayal, Crisis in the Catholic Church. It was written by the Spotlight investigative team and helped me immensely with the research for this video. This video has taken me a lot of time, and I think I'm going to have a nap now and move on to the next video topic, which I've not decided on yet. I hope you guys found this video informative, and however disgusting the events were, I hope you will subscribe for more content like this. For updates and outtakes, check me out on Twitter at TheJuniorHistorianYT. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you guys next time.